It's music by Johann Sebastian Bach. Many of you will have recognized, but perhaps not heard it quite that way. The prelude from the solo violin Partita No. 3 is played here by banjoist Bela Fleck from his CD from a decade or so ago called Perpetual Motion, which is all classical music. Those of you who don't know his name are probably in the minority, than the rest who do probably already know that he's been involved in so many different kinds of music. Not only the expected folk and bluegrass and such, but lots of other things as well. And he's coming to perform his own banjo concerto with the Peoria Symphony on Saturday at the Peoria Civic Center Theater for a concert that starts at 8 o'clock. He is my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thanks for joining us for the show today.
Hey, my pleasure.
So, of course, even your biography brings this business up that you have four names, three of which were taken from rather well-known classical composers, Bela, Anton, and Leos, although I've reported it, it's either Anton Dvorak or Anton Webern.
Webern is the word that I've received.
That you have received from the family, I assume.
Yes, that is who I was named after, although I do sure love some Dvorak.
I'm looking to see, is there any Dvorak on that recording that I played?
No, there wasn't. I need to do another one of those and catch all the next set of composers.
So I brought that up because, of course, one would expect that you might have ended up a classical musician sooner than later. That didn't happen, I gather.
No, it's a complex story, and I won't go too deep into it except to say that my father and my mother split up when I was about a year old, and he's the one who gave me all those names, and it was one of those splits where there was no contact. And I actually went and searched him out when I was in my 40s just to kind of get rid of the mystery of all of that, and now I know him. But so I got these names. It was kind of like, ever hear Johnny Cash's A Boy Named Sue?
Of course.
Where the father names the boy Sue because he's not going to be there. So if he wanted me to become a composer, that was probably the way to do it.
Clear out quick.
Clear out of town.
So was your mom then? What were her musical tastes?
She just liked all kinds of stuff. She wasn't really she wasn't a player or a singer or anything like that. Just wide, kind of typical likes and dislikes. But growing up in New York City, there was a lot of great music going on. And then she married a cellist, ironically, who played classical music. And that was where, actually, I heard a lot of classical music. But I never really thought it had all that much to do with me. I liked the Beatles. This was growing up in the 60s. I liked all the great music that was happening in the 60s. And then I heard banjo music, and I got into that. And so I really didn't see myself ever having any kind of a personal relationship with classical music, but I always liked it.
When you say you heard banjo music, what kind of music were you hearing?
Well, I heard the Beverly Hillbillies with Earl Scruggs playing the banjo, and
which is a tune I hear you play now and then.
Yeah, because that tune, we can laugh about it, but it's some pretty profound banjo playing, and still when I hear that come on TV, I have to stop. And Earl Scruggs has that power over banjo players. When he plays, and especially some of his more amazing playing at certain times in his career, will make a guy like me stop in my tracks, even though I don't know yet I'm going to become a banjo player. I mean, as a little kid, I heard it, and I was like, what is that? And, my brother, who was sitting next to me, heard it, and it had no impact on him whatsoever, but, he wasn't going to become a banjo player, so.
Well, that would be the interesting study, wouldn't it?
Why
two brothers exposed to the same Beverly Hillbillies lick. One goes wow and the other goes eh.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. But I went wow and I'm still going wow over Earl Scruggs. And it's not just the banjo or just, the kind of music he played, but there's some spirit, something about him and the way that he played was magic. And it wove a spell that is still in effect. And as I said, almost every banjo player that I know, it was hearing Earl Scruggs that started them on the path. And so it was like that for me, even growing up in New York City with a cellist for a stepfather and a bunch of classical names and with the Beatles and everything that was going on in the 60s. I just liked all kinds of music. So when I finally got my banjo, I was 15 when I finally got one. And then I was in high school for music and art, which I'd gotten into playing sort of half-assed guitar. I passed the test. This is the Fame school, by the way.
The Fame of, as in the film?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was that school. And so I got in by showing some musical aptitude, but there was nothing, I wasn't a classical player or a singer. They were going to teach me how to play French horn, but that didn't work out.
Oh, that was my instrument. Too bad for you.
Yeah, I'm disappointed because now I realize what a great instrument it is. But now it can't do what the banjo can do, but it's not a bad instrument.
No, it can't.
I just kept working on. I was practicing like crazy through high school on the banjo while suffering through high school. And when I got out, I was a professional musician hitting the road. And then the whole classical thing, not to go on forever, the whole classical thing came into play when I met Edgar Meyer, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
Sure.
He's, obviously a monster musician and composer. And he and I met in the early 80s, and I heard him playing the bass, starting to do recitals and starting to write his own classical works. And that was inspiring to me because he was the first sort of top-level classical player that I had any kind of intimate relationship with. We were friends, and he was a person about my age. So it wasn't. I was like, "Wow, Edgar can do it." I mean, maybe there's a place for me in there, because he had to dig out a place for the bass. There really wasn't the kind of repertoire he wanted to play in the. Nobody had written it yet, so he had to play music for other instruments if he was going to play anything really, really worthwhile. There was only a couple of really strong bass concertos out there by Battistini, so he had to write or play cello stuff. Watching him find a place for his bass, which, should have had a place in classical music, but didn't have because there weren't soloists on his level yet. I thought, maybe I should be trying to figure out how to do that on the banjo too.
Are there other banjo concertos?
Well, there is nothing like what I wanted to do. There was one piece written for Pete Seeger back in the 60s, and he actually decided not to play it once it was written. I think Eric Weisberg played it, and it was played once. And I don't want to say anything negative about anything that's out there. But all I can say is I hadn't heard anything that was on the level of something that I would want to play.
And can you talk about what you had in mind? I mean, we will hear a sample of at least what came out. But when you say what you'd want to play, what was?
Well, something that could show the banjo as an equal instrument to the other instruments in the orchestra, something with the kind of technical hurdles that are typical in concertos, where you really, every great concerto, a violin concerto, piano concerto, cello concerto, has some amazing playing and some sort of mind-opening concepts embedded in it. And I wanted to try and take some of my ideas and put them into a piece like that, And it would have been something, even if there had been another concerto at the level of what I wanted to do, it wouldn't have been my music. I wanted to come up with something that was very personal, because I knew if I could come up with one, there was a chance I might get to play it a lot.
Yeah, that's always a good idea.
And so it's nice to get to do that with your own music. And, talking about Perpetual Motion, which we were just listening to, where I was playing Bach, I mean, that's quite a hurdle to play that music on the banjo, because it's written for another instrument. And so no matter how hard I work to try to play music that's written for, cello or piano or violin, it's not playing to the strengths of the banjo. And over the years, I've discovered a lot about the instrument, a lot of what I think sounds great about the instrument, and I wanted to see some of that information put into a modern concerto.
Well, let's give a listen to some of the final movement. I'm going to let listeners, this is sort of what climaxes here, and they can, we'll leave the rest to their imagination. But I guess before I heard this, I would have expected to hear a bunch of bluegrass, fancy bluegrass licks in here. But for the most part, you're playing some different kind of music.
Well, yeah, and I didn't want to write a bluegrass banjo concerto. I wanted to write a banjo concerto that used the kind of language that I was developing, or things that I wanted to figure out how to do, that this would be my chance to figure out. So the great thing about composing that's different from improvising is that you have time to think it through. And there are things that you can do when you're composing that you would never be fast enough. No improviser would be fast enough to figure out on the spot, in the moment. So what you have all the time in the world to figure out what you want to play and study it and work it over till you come up with these little gems.
Did you leave any room for yourself for improvisation in the piece?
I did not, because I improvise all the time in the rest of my life. And this was my chance to do things that I wouldn't improvise, you know, that I couldn't improvise, and come up with things that I couldn't think fast enough to come up with. Try to play differently than what I normally do. So in the future, I might choose to do a banjo concerto that has improvisation in it, that has lots of spaces for it. But that wasn't what I wanted to achieve with the first one.
Not first time around. Mm-hmm. Here's some of the final movement of Bailaflex Banjo Concerto. He's going to be playing it with the Peoria Symphony this weekend at a concert that starts at 8 o'clock on Saturday. More details coming up. Bailaflex, my guest here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
That's some of the final movement of the Banjo Concerto by Bela Fleck, who was, of course, soloing with the orchestra who commissioned it, the Nashville Symphony Orchestra, Giancarlo Guerrero, the conductor. And that piece will be on a program by the Peoria Symphony this weekend, 8 o'clock Saturday at the Peoria Civic Center Theater. It also includes a couple of pieces by Copland and Bernstein's On the Town Dances. And by the way, the Concerto for Banjo and Orchestra, it has a name. It is The Imposter. Yeah. I have a guess as to why you call it that, but it might be wrong, so fill us
in. What's your guess?
My guess was going to be that what's a banjo doing in a classical orchestra situation?
That works as good as anything else, really. But I imagine that the banjo had snuck into the orchestra and made believe that he was supposed to be, that he was either invited or that he was another instrument. And then by the end of the piece, he's found out and ejected, and that's the chase. That's all the fast music at the end.
So this is program music, in other words.
Yes.
At some level.
Well, you know, you can go, after you've written a piece, you can look backwards and try and figure out what on earth the thing is about, because there's a lot of your unconscious that goes into the writing of a piece like this. Even as consciously as you work for months and months and months to create it, your unconscious is at work in a deep way. So I kind of realized, somebody asked me, what's the underlying story here? And I realized that I had one. I had no idea that I had one, but I had one, and that was basically it. It was almost like the orchestra was a big masquerade party, and I had snuck in with the banjo. And
so the name came afterwards.
Yeah, it did. But I knew all about it when I was asked, so I don't remember figuring that out.
The way you've integrated your instrument into the orchestra reminds me actually of a conversation you and I had. I don't remember what year it was, when you were, it was around the time you had put out your Throw Down Your Heart CDs and video, where you had been in Africa, all over the place, playing with a bunch of other musicians of many different kinds, and I would say integrating yourself into what they were doing. And you seem to do that with a lot of types of music, where you don't take what you're doing and impose it on somebody else, but you take what they're doing and join in.
Yeah, I like that idea. And I feel that when you listen to the orchestra, it's full of all these instruments, and each one of them has its own properties. And that's what's so great about an orchestra, is you have whatever color you want for any part of the song or the piece. And so I feel like the banjo is just another of those instruments. And I've had a few people, even like when I'm rehearsing the piece with a new symphony, and someone, you know, someone will be in the audience listening and saying, you know, we're not hearing the banjo well enough in this section. And I'm like, you're not supposed to. I'm just one of the guys in that section. I'm not soloing. I'm just rolling along in that section. And then after people get to know the piece better, then they understand that there are times when I, you know, when I'm sticking out and I'm a soloist, and there's other times when I'm just a part of the rhythm section. And I really love being part of groups and looking for a way to sort of be invisible in the middle of these things, sort of in the fiber. Because the banjo, since it's almost like a percussion instrument, it really has to embody, this, you know, a central rhythmic role. At least I see it that way. I think it works the best when it's a part of the fabric of rhythm.
I wanted to play one of these tunes, actually the title track, so to speak, of with the guy that you actually came to our town, well, from which we're broadcasting in Urbana, to play with some years ago, Baseku Kuyate, playing an instrument called the Ngoni, one of those that purports to be the ancestor of the banjo. There are other instruments. It's called Throw Down Your Heart. What were you, is this, and this is your tune?
Yeah, I think I know that I wrote this tune on the way to Africa on a layover in Amsterdam, waiting for my flight to Kenya. It's just something that popped into my head, and it was a little bit of an Irish tune in my mind, and I really didn't think it was something that I would do on this trip. But the more I was wandering around Africa playing with all these different musicians, the more I heard music that reminded me of Irish music, and that there was lots of these 6/8 and 9/8 groove tunes and all of these sort of melodies that were very evocative and almost, you know, could have come from from Ireland. So I showed it to the guys in Mali, and it just clicked. I mean, they knew exactly what to do with it, and it sounded like a song of theirs.
And I imagine, I assume, there's lots of improvisation going on here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a nice simple melody. This is a nice vehicle for improvisation because the melody is simple and the chords are simple, and everybody can do whatever they want with it without a lot of study. Because, you know, generally when you're doing something like this, you're showing it to them and recording it right away. You don't have weeks to work on it like the Flecktones. I mean, Flecktones actually don't practice like that. You know, we don't work for weeks on a song. We used to do that in the beginning, but we don't do that anymore. But certain harmony, certain rhythmic types of pieces really do necessitate significant work up front. But with a piece like this, the melody's catchy, you get it right away, the rhythm fell into place, and boom, we just laid it down. I think we did two takes, and one of them was about 45 minutes long, and one of them was about 25 minutes long. And after we finished those two, it was like, okay, it's in there somewhere.
Let's excerpt some and put it on the CD.
Exactly. And that was the thing in Africa is I couldn't get people to play songs many times, but we would play them for a long time. And then I'd have to figure out how to knock it down to a length that so I could have more than three songs on the CD.
And there's a lot on there. It's a great CD, by the way.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed listening to it. Let's give our listeners the chance. Throw Down Your Heart by Béta Fleck with several musicians from Mali. I will probably screw up their names, so except for Baseku Kouyaté, because I have talked with him, and I know that's more or less how he says it. Some other guys here on Live and Local. That's Bela Fleck, the banjo player, who you probably heard clearly at times, other times well integrated into the texture with a number of musicians from Mali on instruments like the ngoni, djembe, bolon, and then a shaker, which is easy enough to recognize from his CD called Throw Down Your Heart, the name of the tune also. Bela Fleck is going to be performing his banjo concerto with the Peoria Symphony, conducted by George Stelluto, this Saturday at the Peoria Civic Center Theater. And my guest is Portion Alive and Local. And you were we were talking about, you know, integrating yourself into different types of music. Do you recall when you first were inclined to break away from the, for lack of a better term, the roots banjo playing and move on to other things? Or at least include other things in what you do?
Yeah, well, I do remember that when I was going to high school, and I pulled out my banjo, everybody would flap their arms like yeehaw, and I found it very offensive. But if I could play something like, you know, the introduction to Stairway to Heaven, people would go, ooh, that's cool. So I think I kind of got excited about that. But pretty early on, I liked the idea of learning blues licks on the banjo or Led Zeppelin licks or, you know, learning Beatles songs or even little bits of classical pieces. So I would say within the first couple of years, I was really striking out on my own. And I really didn't have the technique to do it. I remember trying to figure out how to play Charlie Parker solo from an Oscar for Treadwell, it was called. It was a really great solo of his. And I wanted to play it so bad, but I just didn't have the technique to do it. And every year or so, I would come back to it and try again. Same thing happened with Chick Corea. He had a tune called Spain, and I was dying to learn to play this tune, but I just didn't have... I mean, I could barely play the first chord yet on the banjo, but I was just as interested in playing those kinds of things as I was in playing bluegrass. And also Bach. There was a couple of Bach partitas that I had somehow gotten into my head that I should be able to play on the banjo, and I was working on them. I'd work on a couple measures for a year, and then a couple of years later I came back and I could play quite a bit of it, but it was very slow going, building up the technique that I needed.
So is it really a matter of developing particular technique to play particular styles of music?
Well, in this case it was, because the banjo is taught in a folk manner, and you're taught to play the folk music, and then if you move up from folk music, you know, you start to learn the Scruggs material, which is very position based, and then maybe you'll move to Don Reno, for instance, who did short scale phrases, but nobody was playing full scales up and down the banjo fingerboard. It just wasn't done in all the keys and in such a way that you had the tools to play any kind of music, and that was something that occurred to me after watching Chick Corea and Return to Forever play, and I think it was 1975, was that the notes that these guys were playing, you know, Al Di Meola and Stanley Clark were playing on their bass and guitar, and Chick was playing on the piano, they were all on the banjo too. It sort of stunned me when I realized it, and that I needed to have the technique to find them. I needed to know how to get all around the neck like they did. And so I started working on, you know, the scales in a different way than really had been done before on the five-string banjo, and that kind of gave me the tools. Once I really started to understand that and how to play those scales using, you know, fingers on my right hand to pluck them, alternating fingers. You know, I was on my way to having a technique that you could play most any kind of music with. Just like, you know, if you learned your scales on the piano or guitar or saxophone or violin, you know, you could play most things. Banjo players couldn't really do that coming from the bluegrass tradition because for all those reasons. So that gave me a leg up.
It just wasn't part of the technical training.
Right.
Well, it's delightful for me to hear you, to have, particularly some of our younger listeners, hear you say how important it is to know your scales if you want to be able to play lots of different kinds of music.
Yeah, the trick is to not squash the individuality of a musician while he's learning the techniques, because there is a tendency in teaching music to make people work so hard on the techniques and not work hard on finding their own unique voice. And for some reason, I was just bullheaded enough to stick to my guns on having an opinion about what I liked. A lot of students, especially through the classical music and the jazz world, get a kind of learning where they learn how to do everything, but they don't know who they are. And so there were some great things about me having to figure it out for myself, because I definitely had a folk approach to learning classical or jazz music, in that it was very personal to me.
And it shows.
Well, thanks. I mean, I'm sad that I don't have the kind of classical upbringing or jazz training that would have made me a great reader and given me access to so much more music under my fingers so much more easily. But I'm also glad for the individuality that I have ended up with, because I didn't go that path, because there was no path like that for me at that time.
Well, just for the fun of it, we're going to go out with the group that you're probably best known for, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. This is, I think, your most recent CD called Rocket Science, and one that's a tune is called Bottle Rocket. And I guess this is the reunion of the original band.
That's right. This is the original band was Victor Wooten on bass and Future Man on the drumitar, this crazy drum guitar, and Howard Levy on piano and harmonica. And that group was together for 4 or 5 years, if you include the years before we became a full-time band. I guess from 1988 was our first show, and then we made it through to the end of 92, so I guess about 4 years, 4.5 years. And Howard he was the kind of guy that needed to go do lots of stuff. So it was very hard for him to be in a band that was working 200 shows a year plus. And after 3 years of full-time road work, he left. And then we continued on. We survived it, and we had a lot of great people play with us, including Jeff Coffin, great saxophone player, was with us for 14 years. Because now we're past 25 years of being a group. And then Jeff joined the Dave Matthews Band when their saxophone player died, we were on a 2-year hiatus anyway at that point. We weren't sure, you know, when we were going to get back together, and he got this great offer, and we all said, go do it. This is a great opportunity for you. But then when we got back together a couple of years after that, we were able to entice Howard Levy to come back for a year, and we did that year together, and that's what we're going to hear right here, is some of the music from that period, which is now 2 years ago.
Time passes.
It does.
Bottle Rocket.
We have every intention of getting back together again, possibly with Howard, possibly. You know, we don't know yet how it's going to be, but in the next couple of years, we'll be pulling the group back together again.
And in some number of years, there'll probably be another banjo concerto from Bela Fleck.
Well, I'm actually in discussions about a commission for the second banjo concerto right now, so I'm excited somebody liked it enough.
to ask for another one.
Yeah.
Bela Fleck will play his banjo concerto called The Impostor with the Peoria Symphony Orchestra, conducted by George Toludo, Saturday night at the Peoria Civic Center Theater. The concert starts at 8. There's a pre-concert talk at 7 o'clock. Music by Copeland and Bernstein also on that concert. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, a tune called Bottle Rocket. And that's actually the original lineup of the Flecktones. They got back together for about a year with harmonica player Howard Levy and bass player Victor Wooten, who's, I think, always been in it, and Roy Future Man Wooten on what's called the Drumitar. And then, of course, Bela Fleck on the banjo. He'll be appearing in his own banjo concerto with the Peoria Symphony on Saturday night. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Stay tuned next for a live performance in our studio of music for viola and piano. Support for our broadcast today comes from 40 North 88 West with the 12th Annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 10th through the 13th, with venues throughout the county. The festival, in conjunction with local businesses, is a celebration of music, dance, arts, and theater. Details are available at 40north.org. And of course, our program is supported not only by our business underwriters, but also and especially by our listeners who make contributions. They not only listen, but they register the value of programs like this one by supporting us with their financial contributions. You can do that right now during our spring pledge period, which we're in the middle of right now. 217-244-0025 is the number you can call to make that pledge, or you can contribute online at our website, which is willpledge.org.
You got it.
Thank you.
You did well. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, Kevin. Not only do we have some great music and interview that you did with Bella, but we have some live music coming up here. Looking forward to hear that. The number for you to support this great program, Live and Local, on 217-244-0025. We would love to hear from you. Yesterday, we received a few calls during this program and would like to up it. You need to be an active listener. I know you're tapping your toes and you're listening and you're enjoying the music. How about right now during this break, picking up your phone, giving us a call at 217-244-0025. 0025.
And the amount you choose to contribute is, of course, always up to you. As we like to say, it's whatever value you place in the program.
Absolutely.
And that can be any. That could be a $40 contribution. It could be a $4,000 contribution.
That would be nice.
If you're able and if we're worth it that much to you.
And I'm sure you are to many people out there, Kevin. You know?
If I am, I'd like to hear about it right now. I'd like to hear from somebody right now. 217-244-0025 or willpledge.org. That, by the way, the voice of our station manager, Bob Culkeen.
Huh.
Still relatively new. What, about three years?
This is my third winter in this beautiful heartland of America.
Oh, you picked a good one.
Yeah. This was a great winter. But it's a great community. And, you know, this program, Kevin, is an example of the community that we live in. People are open to different type of music. They want to hear the music. They want to enjoy it. They want to get out and go to the different venues that we have in our communities to listen to many of the people that you bring into this studio. So the number is 217-244-0025. If you enjoy this show, you're going to be entertained in a few minutes with an exciting artist. And if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about. You know that this is a program that you depend on every day, Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock. You're entertained, you're educated, and you are enlightened through Kevin's way, his storytelling, and the people he brings into his studio.
I let somebody else tell the stories.
Well, we are all storytellers in many ways, aren't we? 217-244-0025. Help out the storytellers, right?
WillPledge.org. Urbana Pops Orchestra is in its fifth season. They've been celebrating this year with a series of free recitals by some of its principal players. One each month, started in January with a trombonist, then clarinet, flute, and for the month of April, it is the violist, Lydia Tang, who has been on the show a couple of times before. And she's currently a doctoral student in viola performance and, interestingly, also in library science.
Yes.
A combination I have heard of on not infrequent occasion, actually. And her recital will be at the Urbana Free Library this coming Sunday afternoon from 2 to 3 o'clock. Program that includes music by Bach, Brahms, Emmanuel Vardy, interesting name we'll talk about, and then Kenji Bunch. And with her today is pianist Jasmine Arakawa. What are we going to hear first?
I think first we're going to start with the Kenji Bunch. I'm going to play an excerpt from his Three G's. Kenji Bunch is a composer from Portland, Oregon, where I'm from. And he wrote a piece he explores a lot with different tunings for the viola, alternative tunings. So we have a G as opposed to an A, D, which is normal, G is normal,
and
a low
octave,
G.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, well, you usually hear of alternative tunings for guitar.
Guitar,
and maybe
or
even
folk
banjo
fiddle,
sometimes.
Yeah.
Or folk fiddle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenji Bunch is, so if he's local to your town, you're on sort of a mission to perform music by local composers wherever you are, it seems, or wherever you were.
Yes, yes. I've just really embraced the musical heritage and the musical community wherever I go. It's always fascinating to me. And so that's also what I'm doing with my degree in library science. I'm getting training to be an archivist, so I hope someday to be a music archivist to preserve the local heritage of our community.
And probably dig up as much viola music as possible, right?
Exactly. We all need more of that.
This is a solo piece, so Jasmine will be enjoying it with the rest of us. Lydia Tang, live on Live and Local. Lydia Tang, solo, in a piece called The Three G's, on viola. Kenji Bunch, the name of the composer, and The Three G's for the three tunings of the G on the instrument, which is pretty unusual. Is it really difficult to readjust to hear different tunings like that when you change from what you're used to on the instrument?
I think the most complicated thing for me is just getting used to the other instrument, or more like the instrument getting used to the extra tuning. Because what ends up happening is I'm ending up using a different instrument, because as you're retuning your instrument, it's very easy for the bridge to kind of get pulled out of alignment, and the viola is just really not happy with this extra tuning. So I'm using two different instruments for this recital.
So in other words, if you took the viola and changed in the middle, like a guitarist might do, that would be a problem.
Yeah, but I think it's such a beautiful piece. Every single piece that uses alternative tunings, I'm just really in love with, because it opens up a completely new sonority to an instrument that seems so familiar.
You study with Rudolf Hakan at the University of Illinois, who often plays something it's variously called different things, but the five-string viola. Or I've seen it called a five-string violin, but in any event, it encompasses the range of viola and violin. Has you had a chance to play one of those?
Oh, well, not really. I've tried out Professor Atkins' viola a few times, and I'm looking forward to trying out some of David Rubinius's other violas once I get back to Portland, where he's also from.
Oh, he's from there.
Yeah.
That's the guy who made Rudolf's viola. He was here. Rubinius wasn't here, but Rudolf was here not too long ago, also playing for us live. Our second violist live in our studio in the last month or two.
Yeah.
do you care to share any viola jokes with us today?
Oh, I'm sure you can find a lot on the internet.
For those of you who don't know, violists are frequently the butt of orchestral jokes, and I'm not exactly always sure why. But there's a whole lot of them. They're nowhere near as mean as the conductor jokes, though. I have to say that. The program also includes some music by Bach and as I mentioned, Emmanuel Vardy. What are we going to hear second?
Second is going to be the second movement of Bach's Gamba Suite in D major.
And gamba, what is gamba?
Well,
for our listeners,
that's short for viola da gamba. So. I guess like around the early Baroque period, maybe even earlier, there were different other types of string instruments besides your regular ones you see in the orchestras. And so there was a viola da gamba, which is a viola of the legs, where you hold it kind of like a cello, and then a viola da braccia, which has evolved into the modern viola.
Braccia meaning viola of the neck?
Of the arm.
Of the arm. And that's where we are now. So you're going to play a gamba piece on the braccia.
Yes.
Because it would be a whole other thing if you did it on the other. And this is with the keyboard, so we're going to be joined by Jasmine Arakawa. They're both going to be playing Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at Urbana Free Library. Thank you. second movement, you said?
Yes.
From Bach's Sonata for Viola da Gamba and Keyboard in D major. Do we keep the original key?
Yes.
As far as you know? Yeah. Played on the regular old viola with keyboardist Jasmine Arakawa. Jasmine, will you be playing on piano at the recital on Sunday?
I believe so.
You believe so?
Yeah. I've never been to the Urbana Free Library yet, but I was told that there would be a grand piano.
An actual piano as opposed to a clavinova.
Yeah. Well, the clavinova. I was looking for harpsichord sound, but I couldn't find it on here, so too bad.
So what sound did we have here?
Have organ, which would be a little bit an experiment, and strings.
Okay, all right. they'll be playing at 2 o'clock until about 3, a free program at the Urbana Free Library. The fourth of a series of recitals this year sponsored by the Urbana Pops Orchestra featuring some of its principal players, and Lydia Tang is the principal violist of the Urbana Pops Orchestra currently. We interrupt these proceedings for a couple of minutes to remind listeners that you can support the appearance of live musicians in our studio on this program, Live and Local, by making a financial contribution and continuing to make this possible for us in the coming year. Our fiscal year restarts on July the 1st, so that's what we're raising money for now. We have a goal of $140,000 during this spring pledge period, so it's a pretty important one. Bob Culkeen knows all about that as the station manager.
Yeah, well, it is a $140,000 goal. We're looking to get at least 15 new friends today with calls to 217-244-0025. We are going through the budget process right now, looking at program acquisition and continued programs and local programs. And if you're listening to this program right now, we know it's of value to you. So for you going to the phone or to your internet connection, you can go online to willpledge.org, or you can pick up a phone and give us a call at 217-244-0025. In the studio today, we have a avid second-generation supporter of the arts and NPR stations. And it's great to know that you are a supporter, Lena, and that you're here playing and enjoying being in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Why do you give?
Oh, I give. I love the programming on WILL. I love the classical music. I love the news reporting and the local information, too.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you in here celebrating the station and your music. It's just terrific. And this is an example of what Kevin does Monday through Friday, bringing exceptional talent into the studio for our listeners and our area to hear the wonderful program you put together.
And talent across many different musical genres.
Absolutely.
I mean, even Bela Fleck covers so many genres himself, and then Lydia bringing in different genres within the realm of classical music. I mean, the Kenji Bunch piece, not your average classical tune that we heard at the beginning, seemed to have influences probably in the pop and rock worlds. Mm-hmm. And are we going to hear some music by Emmanuel Vardy next?
Yes. The Emmanuel Vardy, actually, the program I picked for this concert was one of imagination and of stories, where the violist kind of imagines himself to be a rock guitarist or to be a viola da gamba or to be a clarinet for the Brahms Sonata. And this Emmanuel Vardy has 5 movements that are all just little vignettes of just completely different characters, which includes a rock piece as well. Maybe some sort of spiritual piece, and also a kind of a parody of old-time fiddling, too. So the selection we're going to play for you is the Ad Lib and Slow Walk.
From Emmanuel Vardy's Suite for Viola and Piano, based on American folk songs.
Thank you.
Music by Emmanuel Vardy, the fourth movement out of five from his suite for viola and piano based on American folk songs. And Just a Poor Wayfaring Stranger, was that that tune? Or might have another name.
Well, could be.
Yeah. With Lydia Tang performing on viola and Jasmine Arakawa on the piano. They'll be playing the complete piece, of course, and also music by Bach, Brahms, and Kenji Bunch, a piece we heard earlier this half hour, in a recital Sunday afternoon from 2 o'clock at the Urbana Free Library, another of a series of solo recitals by principal players of the Urbana Pops Orchestra during their fifth season. Was viola your first instrument, or have you ever been a violinist?
Oh, I did start on violin. I started on violin when I was 12 years old, and the Miro Quartet came to my school and did a master class, and so I saw the violist there, who was just so good, and he also started studying at the relatively late age of 12, and I was just like, I want to be just like you.
So you decided to flip over to the viola at that point. We had Pinka Zukerman was at the center just recently and played both violin and viola. And I remember he said that if you do play the viola, you should continue to play the violin. I don't know if that's something you do or not. And I sort of forget some of his reasoning, but I remember that was a little bit of a lesson. And Emmanuel Vardy was a viola professor at the University of Illinois here at one point. He's sort of a part of your continued mission to play music by local composers.
Right, exactly.
Well, thanks for coming in to both of you. It's been a pleasure to hear you on the program today. They've been live in our studio. And, of course, we encourage you to consider going to hear them live at the recital and hear the full program. And we encourage folks to call in and support live music on Live and Local, and also all the types of music that we bring to you, whether it's somebody that I happen to talk to on the phone, like Bela Fleck, somebody who's coming through as part of in an international career like Bela Fleck, or local performers from throughout our listening area. Live and Local covers it all. And we encourage you to consider supporting the program with your contributions. The phone number where you can do that quite easily is 217-244-0025, or you can pledge online at willpledge.org. Parting words from our station manager.
Well, we have one of our guests is a second-generation supporter of the arts and NPR and the music that we bring, and I want to thank your parents for allowing you to still continue that on. And we are celebrating later this week, Generations of Giving. And so if you are a multi-generation household, the number is 217-244-0025. And if you're not, it's never too late to start.
Start the new generation.
Start the new generation.
Which goes to our goal of signing up a lot of new friends.
Yes. Each day, especially today, we'd like to get 15 new friends. And if you're not a current member, time to be an active listener. Go to the phone. Give us a call, 217-244-0025, or go online to willpledge.org.
Thank you very much, Bob, for joining us on the program
today.
It's
always a pleasure to be with you, Kevin. You know that.
And, of course, Lydia Tang and Jasmine Arakawa and Bela Fleck. Lots of music for you to go out and hear every day in our listening area. This is 90.9 WYL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293AF Danville, NPR Classical Music for Central Illinois.